Oh, the roots of that are really ancient. Starting as early as, let's see, AD 400 or so, you have really widespread consumption of cacao-flavored foods and drinks all across Central America and Mexico. And the origins of that came from probably Amazonia and South America. So there are connections starting there. And cacao, not just to eat or to drink it, but the seed of that tropical tree also was a kind of currency in the 1300s, 1400s, right before European contact. So it was connecting people in this kind of global way. It united a lot of really disparate areas and places where people were fighting against each other, but they were using this cacao currency.
Where were the main cultivation areas just prior to the introduction of the Spanish?
In Central America, primarily, and in Mexico, especially the border area between Mexico and Guatemala, an area that was known as Soconusco. And it was so important. And here's some of these sort of global empire connections that the Aztecs conquered that one little place just to have a direct line on access to cacao. And then when the Spanish arrived, there's this pocket of what eventually became colonial Guatemala. So it's today's western El Salvador and part of Pacific Guatemala. And that area evidently was a super producer. So there were just a few main big-time producers of cacao, and on the order of millions of cacao seeds every year being circulated around. And the Spanish step into this.
Makes it easy for government control.
Exactly. They just take over a system that was already there, and they use the cacao as currency.
Is it the main form of currency, or are there
It's the main form.
the other forms?
People paid their taxes, their tribute, and all of that in cacao. And in fact, they demanded cacao in different areas that didn't grow it, but they had to pay in it. The main reason for the Spanish love of the cacao currency is it was the small coin. If you go and you try to buy a hen and you've got something equivalent to a $100 bill, which would be a silver coin, you can't do it. It makes the commerce very difficult. Cacao worked like dollars and fives and that sort of thing in our currency today.
Europe was relatively late in the game in introducing caffeinated beverages, tea, cocoa, coffee. Why did the Spanish take a currency that was useful in Mesoamerica and say, "Hey, we've got an opportunity here in Europe"?
I think that whole context of the native people were using it in all sorts of different ways, and that they had concocted all sorts of beverages and foods and a whole array of things that Europeans were very interested in. And it ties into ideas about health and also ideas, goals of colonization. So how do you incorporate these new people, these new places, and these new substances? And the problem, the dilemma that they had was this humoral idea of health, and that the climate that you're in, the soils that you're around, and especially the food that you ate could change you fundamentally. So today, all of these associations, say with Valentine's Day and chocolate is this symbol or replacement for love, they saw that as a very, very real thing, just as that if you ate certain foods, it would give you certain qualities, characteristics. And so there was a lot of debate and interest. You know, can this make us better? Is this healthy for us? Is this good for us? Really, it actually moves pretty rapidly into there are early 16th century accounts of consuming this drink, and that they call it chocolate. And it tastes really terrible, but the more I drank it, the better I felt. And so they were very interested in capturing, you know, making that part of their world. And it became part of their world very quickly.
Why did it taste terrible?
I think it was the particular recipe that some of those travelers' accounts were sampling, that they didn't care for it. Part of the work that I've done just really recently is look at pre-Columbian evidence of different sorts of recipes for cacao drinks and foods. And in fact, looking at pre-Columbian Maya texts, a lot of them are sweet. They describe sweetness, different kinds of sweetness. So a fruity sweetness, a honey sweetness, and other sorts of qualities that we know today can be from the way the bean is handled and processed, can make it naturally sweet. And then you add a little sweetener to it, and wow, it's great. And so I think the European fondness for sweetness actually came from learning from Native Americans, because, say, the first way that the very first recipe for any use of chocolate in a French setting is as a sauce for a kind of duck. So it's a savory sauce with a bouquet garni and all of these other spices, and you add the chocolate to it.
About what year was that?
That was 16, it's in the 1630s. Okay. So very early.
Very early.
Oh, yeah, very early.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Katie Sampeck, who's a scholar of chocolate. There is early evidence, too, that consumption tended, at least in the early part of the history of chocolate, to be somewhat gender-linked in the early colonial era. Why is that?
I think that there's a difference between what gets emphasized and drawn out of all of the documentary and other sorts of evidence that we have, and art and so forth. And so in some ways it is gender-linked, because women, it becomes linked with sexuality and potency, that it can inflame passions, and that women are shifting in their roles in society. And so it becomes, women become the decadent consumers of this substance that could make them go over the edge or make them become so alluring that they overpower men.
Great for men. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And you have even Spanish Inquisition cases of people who are making what are known as hechizos, these love potions. And chocolate tends to be a very consistent ingredient in these love potions. And so women tend to be linked to that. But if you look really objectively at all the evidence and who's consuming what and who's making these love potions, it tends to be pretty balanced. And it's throughout the classes.
So then, as now, it's all marketing.
It is.
Continue along the line. How do we get from this humoral balance to actual chocolate and love and the stand-in for romance that we have today? Was it that developed early on, or when does it become that developed?
I think it's what we experience today has these really deep historical roots that we tend not to recognize. And chocolate is such a great example of one special preparation from one little place makes it big on the market, partly because it's money, actually, but also because it's a particular taste that then people take up, and they attach, debate about how moral it is, how it can improve us, if it's healthy for us, if it's sinful, what it should taste like, what time of day, and who should be eating it. All of these become these debates. So that today, when you say the word chocolate, it has all these immediate associations. But it takes a long time. It takes centuries.
Were there efforts to stamp it out because of its sinfulness, or because somebody didn't have market access and decided that they were going to gripe about it until they got market access?
That's almost a constant theme in chocolate history, that there's this griping and complaining throughout. So if you start with pre-Columbian evidence, it's the Aztecs taking over Soconusco so they can have direct access. And then from there, the reason why we even use this one word, chocolate, because there are lots of other cacao preparations, lots of beverages, lots of foods, perfectly pronounceable names. Chocolate is a Nahuatl word that's the same language family as Aztec, but it's a word that's really found and is the name for the drink that came from colonial Guatemala. So that becomes popular when it hits it big on the market. And then the fights become, well, who produces the best quality cacao and who should have control of that? And should there be monopolies of that? And people in this area of Western El Salvador and Guatemala are proclaiming, we've got the best. This should be the main source on the market because we're the highest quality. And these upstarts that happen in the 17th century in Venezuela and in Ecuador, there's a shift from native-controlled high-volume production to enslaved labor in these other places where the environment's okay. It's just not been grown there in that way before. And so the complaints are, this is poor quality. It damages the health of people. You should prohibit it. It shouldn't be shipped anywhere. That it's going to be bad for the empire. And then even the consumption of it, too, becomes quite a debate about its sinfulness in that chocolate's used so many ways. Is it a food? Is it a drink? The key thing for Catholics was, does it break the ecclesiastical fast? So there were people who were sitting in Mass in the 17th century drinking cups of chocolate to pass the time until Mass was over. And and
so you can take your coffee in the church.
Right.
All right.
Well, the bishop got really upset about it. And it's a wonderful story about the bishop prohibits this practice. The parishioners decide to go to rural churches to attend Mass so that they'd be out of...
Fewer rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they're not keeping such a, you know, watching us so closely. The bishop finds out about it. Then he proclaims that any priest serving Mass, administering Mass to people consuming chocolate will be excommunicated.
Wow.
So that was powerful.
That's a heavy stick.
That's a heavy stick. And then what happens to that bishop? Not too long after he issues this edict, he dies after drinking what is said to be a tainted cup of chocolate.
Sounds like marketing to me.
Yes. So people would kill for chocolate. They wanted to keep their chocolate. And then this story also becomes an illustration of divisions between Protestants and Catholics, because the people telling this story are people who converted to Protestantism and said, look, this is a healthy substance. We have no problems. People, and especially this was a British writer saying, in the English body, this makes us beautiful and strong, and we don't have all those problems that those Catholics have. So it was a way to connect morality, show political independence, and proclaim sovereignty.